Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast. I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and joining me after an action-packed weekend of rugby on the women's front and in the men's domestic game is Steve Cornings from the Evening Standard. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Lawrence, I'm very well, but I'm here in the studio on my own. You're not feeling too chipper?
No, the long workload has taken its toll on me, I think. Nothing to do with last Thursday's Rugby Works post-Six Nations luncheon, but I was fit enough for one round of Premiership action on Saturday at Tottenham, which we'll get onto in a second, but I had to pull out of yesterday's trip down to Bath, which was another fantastic game of rugby. What have you been up to across the weekend?
Back to the usual this weekend, back to ferrying the kids around. Thankfully, Alfie had a 12-0 win yesterday, which took the edge off it a little bit. But my wife, similar to you, is she's been sick in bed all weekend. So it's been one long weekend, shall we say, trying to dip in and out and watching bits and pieces of rugby. But we got there in the end. Talking about last week, Flats obviously stood in for you yesterday at Bath. Didn't he do a great job, I thought, hosting what was a fantastic lunch, raising money for Dallaglio Rugby Works, superbly organised as ever. We all sort of made our way home, I think, about 8 o'clock. I lost sight of Nick, who's joining us soon, pretty much after that. He was going on to do some karaoke, maybe, was he? Yeah, producer Jules is nodding there. Good day, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, very good day. Annual event. I think this was our seventh Boys Dells, Canary Wharf, Six Nations wrap-up kind of summary. And yes, over 200 people there. More importantly, we had some young students from Francis Barber Academy in Tooting who got up on stage to talk about the impact that the charity Rugby Works has had on their lives and really give everyone in the room an idea of where and why they might be donating funds and how it really does impact everyone's lives that's directly involved in the charity. So over £50,000 raised, which for a fairly small breakfast, lunch and dinner was pretty good going. And obviously it was a precursor to what was another fantastic weekend of domestic action. Friday night saw Bristol Bears produce an emphatic performance and a win against table-topping Northampton Saints, 52 points to 21. No one would have predicted that. Leicester's top four playoff hopes slightly dented by a late try from Gloucester. Leicester losing Matoni Woods 25-27. And then we saw two games on Saturday. Exeter Chiefs defeating Newcastle Falcons 25-16. A real humdinger of an occasion and match at Tottenham Hotspur. Saracens really flexing their muscles, 52 points to 7 against Harlequins. And then a very entertaining game finishing on Sunday. Bath 42 points and Sale Sharks 24. So, I mean, I guess the beauty of this league going into this weekend with only a few points separating the teams at the very top and the teams towards the bottom is that anyone and everyone, you know, bar Newcastle, maybe Gloucester and Bristol, are capable of making that top four finish.
So joining us to discuss all those games is the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Puriwell. Nick, hello, how are you?
Hi, good, thank you. How are you guys? All good?
Good, good. Yeah, so let's go back to Friday night briefly and the wins that Lawrence just mentioned there for Bristol and for Gloucester. Nick, do you think Bristol are now very much firmly back in the hunt for a top four place?
That's one match. I think it's really early to say that. They've been so inconsistent for such a long time. I mean, but I think what's interesting is that there's an awful lot of squads with an awful lot of talent, and Bristol are one of them. And if they can get it together, then absolutely they've got the quality and the credentials right through that squad to go on and potentially win a league. But it's not about doing it for one game, is it? And I think it was always fascinating. This season turns from marathon to sprint in a split second, basically. And I think the issue there is that the sides with real pedigree when it comes to winning are the sides that are probably going to come through. And I think, unfortunately, Bristol don't fall into that category just yet. You know, Saracens, when they lost at Leicester in January, Martin McCall said basically exactly that. Was sort of a veiled threat almost, even though he wouldn't have seen it as that. But he was basically saying it'll be the teams that get the momentum after the break that will go on and contest the title, and one of those will lift it. And I think we've seen in a flash the weekend just gone that a few things that people thought were trends that were developing before the break have probably already been busted a little bit. So it's fascinating, because let's just see what happens next.
Yeah, and Northampton, those defensive frailties seem to come back to the fore, didn't they, that they've obviously shown in previous seasons. Do we take this as a one-off and just trying to get themselves back into gear after such a long break?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they've probably given more players to international rugby than they have previously. They've got the added luxury of being top of the table. They were 7 points clear when they are going into this weekend. They're obviously not 7 points clear anymore. Yes, they can afford to have one blip. But what makes it so fascinating is that maybe every single side has got to play each other virtually. So there's going to be, you know, a bit of table moving right the way through to the final four places being decided at the end of the season.
And in terms of form players, there's nobody more in form than Zach Mercer at the moment. I mean, man of the match again, 11 defenders beaten, 26 carries, 128 metres, another lovely, beautiful chip ahead. Surely he's got to be firmly in Steve Borthwick's mind to go on that summer tour now, hasn't he? I mean, playing your old position, Lol, as well, number eight. Wouldn't you like to see him in the England team?
Well, listen, he was firmly in Steve Borthwick's mind when he had a conversation with him to come back from Montpellier, where he was player of the French season. And he obviously came into the World Cup squad. Not quite sure what happened between that conversation and the World Cup squad being named, but he was quite unceremoniously dumped. And, you know, both parties have subsequently, you know, made their views felt. I mean, Zach Mercer can only do what all good players do and respond in the way that really has an impact on the field. You know, he's been man of the match. Gloucester have had a huge upturn in their results since he's come back. They've won the Premiership Cup against Leicester, where he was again outstanding. And he goes very close to being man of the match in every game he's playing. And I suppose, you know, look, Steve Borthwick has shown that he's not a stubborn man. He is fully prepared to open the door to players that perform well. I mean, you've only got to look at Ben Earl, who was left out of Steve Borthwick's squad and team on a number of occasions, had a conversation with him, and look where Ben Earl is now. So I would say never with Zach Mercer. I'm sure Steve Borthwick is sensible enough to recognise that we need every player competing for every position to make the squad as strong as it possibly can be.
Now, looking at Saturday, a game that you were both at, Saracens and Harlequins, one team turned up, one clearly didn't. Harlequins CEO Laurie Dalrymple's actually issued an apology to the fans yesterday following that overwhelming defeat. We won't say what Joe Marler said about the performance, which was more than colourful. Nick, in terms of Quins themselves, again, I mean, I know we're talking about, is this just a one-game blip for them? But all the history was made by the opposition. Can they recover that lost ground from that defeat? Because that's got to certainly give them a knock, hasn't it, for the rest of the season?
Well, I think the beauty of the league being so tight is that absolutely they can, because obviously they were second before going into this round of fixtures. I think the big problem is that they looked at this set of fixtures now, this three or four games, and call them the defining block. Well, the big problem now is that the first cube of that block didn't define the rest of the season, you know, before the Saturday. So big challenge for them now is to get right back on it straight away. I don't really think there's any need for Laurie Dalrymple to apologise, not least because he's not a player. So I think, you know, the coaches and players came out and said what was necessary after the game. I think everybody who follows rugby is fairly switched on and mature enough to know that sometimes it doesn't happen. That doesn't detract from the fact that it was pretty poor. But I think it is about a season and not 1 week. That's why a league system is in place in the way it is. Even a cup system, because you can't win one game and get a trophy, can you? So there was opportunity for them to turn it around, but they've got Bath at home at the weekend, and that's an absolutely massive one for them, because they need to set a tone again now. So they need to win that game, because obviously that bleeds into the European knockout game against Glasgow at home a week later. So they were pretty blunt with themselves about what's on the line in the next few weeks, and I think they'll be pretty blunt with themselves again about the fact that in the next fortnight, their whole season on the line is isn't it? They need to beat Bath, and they'll obviously want and need to beat Glasgow at home. You know, they've worked so hard to get themselves a home draw in the Champions Cup, so they really need to win two on the bounce now. And if they do that, then the season looks completely different again. So there will be this changing complexion week on week. That said, I would expect a team like Saracens just to go from strength to strength now. I think the way they'll harness this result, they've got an awful lot of players back fit that they didn't have before. The defending champions, they've won it seven times. It's Owen Farrell's last season. They don't need more storylines. So they don't need to invent anything to give themselves any more ammunition to go at it. And I think that they're still the best team out there anyway.
Yeah, and how good was Owen Farrell, Lol? I mean, 250th club appearance. He's now scored more points against one club, 278 against Quins, than anybody else. I see, interestingly, there were some suggestions at the weekend that Saracens have started following Crusaders fly half Fergus Burke on Instagram. So that's already, everybody thinks that he's going to be the new Owen Farrell. But Crusaders having a bit of a nightmare at the moment, aren't they, in Super Rugby? I think they've lost all six games that they've played so far. But I mean, Farrell clearly put down a marker as being still the one of, if not the best number 10 in the country.
Well, he did. I mean, listen, first of all, congratulations to Saracens. I thought not just the match itself, but the occasion was exactly what club rugby in this country should aspire to being. You know, Harlequins put on the big game at Christmas. I mean, can you imagine if every club could deliver one of those games a season? That would be 10 enormous games of rugby. It was an international test match in club colours. The atmosphere, the venue, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is first class. All the players coming back from international duty. It had all the ingredients to be a real classic. Unfortunately, for Harlequins, Saracens took their physical side of their game. I mean, they played probably one of the best performances I've seen from a club side, given the opponent, for quite some time. And very fitting for Owen Farrell, as you say, 250th club game. I don't think it's an overstatement to say probably Saracens' greatest ever player. And I say that in the nicest possible way. In terms of what he's achieved, you know, when you think about players like Kieran Bracken, Richard Hill, Francois Pienaar, you know, Michael Liner, they've had some great, great players over many, many years. Maritoji, you know, all of them. But in terms of his all-round game, everyone could see the benefits that he'd had from having 7 weeks of no rugby. And he looked fit, fresh, incredibly determined, and put in a magnificent performance. You know, listen, there's a number of teams that are in this playoff run. But Saracens are timing their run, maybe in the way that WAS used to, where you come from fourth and you just get better and better every weekend.
I do like your idea, actually, of every club should go to one big ground. I don't understand why they don't, to be honest.
Maybe it's not going to happen overnight, but hopefully we should try and build towards that in the future.
Definitely. It was a huge occasion, wasn't it? Now, we do have to touch on the TMO. There was an incident, which obviously, Nick, you've written about this today, involving Stuart Tearidge. He was overheard telling referee Christopher Ridley that he didn't want to take any action against Stefan Levice for his two-kneed, should we say, infringement on Owen Farrell because it had been picked up by Austin Healey first. Lawrence, you do comms, obviously. Are you hearing what the TMO is saying? Is the TMO hearing what you say? How does it work?
No, listen, we are absolutely hearing what the TMO says and the referee. I was in commentary with Austin. And, you know, that is a very good process because we are, as broadcasters, the people that are trying to explain the game and bring the game alive into the living room or the pub. And it is important that we are hearing things that are talked about and that we are then trying to translate and explain that in layman's terms to the viewer. We have regular calls with the officials as a group, with broadcasters, referees, because there is a relationship, which is a very good one by and large, where we all work together to try and promote and portray the game in the right way. The director has open access to the TMO and the referee. We have closed access, but we can hear it. Now, where the challenge comes is the TMO is in the truck, but doesn't listen to the feed of the commentary. But on this occasion, because the director was in conversation with Austin about it, our director, the TMO obviously heard it. So, you know.
So look, he didn't hear Austin saying it. Director saying to him.
I mean, look, Austin brought it up in commentary because he saw it. And because Austin mentioned it, maybe the TMO then went back to have a look at it. Now, the TMO is one person in a truck. And when you are one person in a truck watching the entire game, you are going to miss things. There is absolutely no doubt about that. You have not got eyes everywhere. You know, you're trying to keep an eye on everything that's going on in the game. And I don't think it's a bad thing that Austin mentioned it. I think what happened is that his comments, obviously, the TMO's comments got aired to the entire broadcast. And look, we've seen this happen at VAR, haven't we? And everyone ends up with a little bit of egg on their face, doesn't look good. But the reality is, by and large, the process between the TMO, the broadcasters and the programme director is a very, very good one. On this occasion, maybe it was something that the TMO, you know, was going to go back and have a look at. But unfortunately, in his opinion, because Austin had already made light of it, it would look like it was, you know, the witness leading, really. And that's, but does that matter, quite frankly? An infringement is an infringement. An act of foul play is an act of foul play. And as it turns out, I don't think it was quite as serious as it maybe first looked. It was probably a yellow card or maybe a penalty. But the try had already been scored and the conversion was about to be taken. So really, this is where the game has to move on a little bit and it has to be a bit more grown up and say, look, it was only a penalty at best anyway. Let's just let it go now. We can't analyse every single thing that happens in a game. You know, we've got to keep moving on because if we did, then we'd still be playing the game now.
Moving on to the final game of the weekend, the one that you missed, Lawrence, which I bet you were a bit sore, actually, that you did. How good were Bath? Joe Cocconasinga, two tries. Finn Russell, his first ever drop goal, which I couldn't quite believe, off his left foot. Sale, though, now have lost seven in all competitions since Christmas. But Bath are purring nicely, aren't they?
The game was a very entertaining game, actually. And, you know, two sides that obviously are up in the mix for different reasons. Sale, such a physical team normally and set-piece based and kind of wear you down a little bit. Bath playing with a freedom and a you know, a really nice balance, really, with Finn Russell pulling the strings in at 10, with Spencer, you know, giving them that extra kicking game. The game was very competitive. I thought it was kept swinging one way, then the other. And unfortunately for Sale, it got to about the 60th minute and it just unraveled, really, in 10 minutes, where they got a yellow card, didn't they? And they conceded a couple of scores. They lost a couple of lineouts of their own, very uncharacteristically. And suddenly, Bath got two, you know, got a score and another score ahead, and that was the game gone. So the scoreline looks kind of quite brutal for Sale, but I thought Sale were right in the game with about and up until about the 60-65 minute mark. Yeah, look, there's a nice balance to Bath at the minute. I think if they keep everyone fit, I think they've got a great chance of staying in that top four, and they're going to be a contender.
Looking ahead to the weekend, then we kick off with Newcastle against Leicester. Nick, Steve Diamond's gone in there. It's mission impossible, but Newcastle know now, are confirmed for definite that they won't get relegated because there won't be any, which is something that we all knew. Pick me a winner for that one, Newcastle against Leicester.
I think you expect Leicester to hit back and get cracking, get rolling again. And I think Newcastle, you know, they've got to get back to the days of just building on the fact that no one really wants to play at Kingston Park, especially not, you know, if you've got a Friday night, cold, wet, with the horrible sideways rain Friday night at Kingston Park. They definitely used to play on that in their strongest times. And that's the kind of thing they'll be looking to get back towards. And I think, you know, Steve Diamond will try and build a side in his image, really. And that'll be something that no one wants to play against anyway, if he manages that. But I think that's a long-term project, really, isn't it? So I think I'd expect Leicester to get up there and get rolling again because they'll feel the pressure on themselves to get moving after last week.
Yeah, then I'll give you all the next three games, actually, because I think you've got a triple header this weekend, haven't you? Northampton Saracens, is that your first game on Friday night?
Yes, I'm at Franklin's Gardens. Look, it's a fascinating encounter. I think Northampton's season turned, really, on when they beat Saracens at the Stonex earlier on, and they really went on a run after that, didn't they? You know, and that was a statement win for them. So there's a couple of sort of subplots, really. Northampton need to get back to winning ways with games running out. They're still very much at the top end of the table. But Saracens, off the back of that win, you know, as Nick said, have got everything they need in their armoury. They've got players coming back from injury. They rested Maritoji. They've got Tom Willis back now. Jamie George was on the bench. So they can shuffle their pack a little bit and still look very strong. And look, Northampton, you know, yes, it's a game that they want to win. It will be very impressive if they can go from shipping, you know, 20 or 30 points, whatever it was against Bristol, points difference, to beating Saracens. So I might say that Saracens might take another step forward there. It'd be a close game, but I think I could see Saracens winning that. But Northampton, very much not out of the hunt. They could lose those opening two games and win a couple and still be in the top four. Gloucester-Bristol, I'm actually not involved in that game, but again, it's fascinating because both of those teams are back in form now. Gloucester off the back of the Premiership Cup win and with Zach Mercer and one or two others playing very well. They seem to be moving in the right direction and have got that confidence back. And look, Bristol underperforming this season. I think that their chances of a top four finish are slightly gone given the quality that's above them. But you never know, really. It could be a really open running game and probably call that as a home win. And then Quinns Bath, you know, Bath, for all their running rugby away from home, they've had this policy of picking different teams. So it'd be fascinating to see whether they go full bore at Harlequins. I suspect they'll make a few changes. Johan van Graam is very detailed and plans ahead. So he would have already earmarked this fixture for certain players. And I can see Quinns really reacting and coming off the back of that and probably doing enough to win that game.
Nick, Sale Exeter brings up the rear on Sunday. Exeter still in the top four. Rob Baxter's doing an amazing job there, isn't he? But Sale definitely need a win.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they've got to get their season back rolling in the right way, basically. Yeah, it's a fantastic season from Exeter, given all the changeover. A lot of unusual things happened across the summer and into this season for Exeter off the field. Some of the things they've done have been a bit odd, but what they've put on the field in some of the young players is impressive. And a lot of time and respect for Alex Anderson at Sale, and he's a very good human being, great man, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, and somebody that the players up there absolutely love playing for. And he's got a great record with them. So, you know, I think he obviously took them to the final last year when they lost to Saracens. And I think that, you know, a lot of neutrals have got a lot of time for Sale because, you know, partly because of Alex Anderson and how he goes about his business in that respect. So, you know, if people who don't have specific skin in the game would be hoping that probably Sale could get moving again just to obviously make it interesting as the season comes to the climax.
Very brief, but should Wales front up and play Georgia in the autumn? The challenge has been laid down now by the Georgians. Is that a game that we all want to see?
Well, I mean, if Wales should play Georgia, then you'd have to argue that Scotland should play them as well, really, and maybe even France, possibly England, because let's be honest, the Italians didn't just beat Wales, did they? They beat quite a few sides and probably could have won a couple more. So, I think the conversation is open again, but I think Italy have proved themselves to be very worthy in the Six Nations. I think maybe maybe we'll move towards a conversation around some sort of playoff in the future between the team at the bottom and the team at the top. But bring it on if that's what everyone wants.
Yeah, I think Richard Cockerell would look forward to that, wouldn't he, Nick?
100%. I think it's a bit like Steve Diamond at Newcastle and Cocker's over at in Georgia. It's a kind of marriage made in heaven there, in terms of scrummaging heaven there for those two. But, you know, Georgia, you couldn't pigeonhole them as just a scrummaging team. You know, they've added so much more to their game. And you can understand why they feel like they've kind of gone as far as they can go in a second-tier competition. But equally, one of the reasons why Italy are starting to find their feet now is stability and the ability to build in the long term. And if that's going to be taken away from you every year, or taken away from one team every season, then how can they have stability? And the idea of promotion relegation is brilliant, but there isn't enough money or stability or concrete surety in the game of rugby, even at test level at this time, to support that.
It shouldn't be the Six Nations, it should be the Ten Nations, maybe, shouldn't it? We shouldn't start talking about relegation, get more in. Lawrence, what was the quickest time you ever did 40 metres in? Lewis Rees-Sammet ran 4.44 seconds. Did you ever get timed over 40 metres?
I wasn't as quick as them, but before my ACL injury in 2001, my 10 and 30 metre sprint times would be fairly close to the wingers, yeah. I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be at the front of the conversation, but as you'd expect, those guys are quick.
Would you have taken your top off as well to do it?
Well, in 2003, I'd have definitely taken my top off to do it. I'm not sure I'd be rushing to take my top off now, but I don't think I'd be interesting the NFL scouts as a running back or a wide receiver. I think I might just about make ends meet as a tight end, but that would be about it, really.
Anyway, moving on, we're going to welcome our guest in a moment.
Well, yeah, so Nick, thanks for joining us, and I'll see you at the Stoop on Saturday for that that clash against Bath.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
So joining us now is England captain Marley Packer, fresh from winning her 100th cap and from winning the opening game in the Women's Six Nations against Italy at the weekend. Marley, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've only just arrived back at Pennyhill Park from flying back from Italy. Have to ask, how are you feeling?
Thank you for having me. I'm quite tired at the moment, but last couple of days, just been on cloud nine. Super proud of the girls' performance and how we played. But also, you know, everyone keeps telling me 100 caps is a massive milestone. And yes, it is for me, but I just keep wanting to get my next one and not think about it too much. So it's been a pretty amazing weekend.
And you managed, obviously, to win the game quite comfortably in the end, but a red card in the opening 10 minutes for Sarah Beckett. I mean, you know, these things can have a bit of a readjustment, can't they? Because, you know, yes, while you train for these sorts of things to happen, you've still got to rejig everything. The Italians were probably quite spurred by that a little bit, and it just took a time for England to settle down. Maybe for the first game, that can often happen. And I guess it's probably quite a relief that the points started to come eventually, really, with 8 tries in total.
Yeah, like we knew Italy were going to come at us. They brought really good line speed, what we wasn't really expecting though from them. But losing a player 10 minutes into a game changed just the way we played. We had to change our lineup setup. We had to change around the scrum because she was our number 8. So that pushed me across in attacking scrum. But I think we dealt with it quite well. I think probably the frustration came for us that was actually our soft errors. Just a bit of handling out there. But what we said we wanted to go out and do, we did do that. We just didn't make that finishing pass or someone would go into touch. So first game under the belt that we're going to grow under this tournament is the way I see it. 6-day turnaround now until Wales, which is at Ashton Gate, which is going to be, I think, an incredible atmosphere there. I think they've sold around 15,000 tickets already and probably a lot more come this week and then on the actual day. So as a performance out in Italy, yeah, we've got a lot of learning to do, but, you know, we move on to the next game.
John Mitchell celebrated his birthday this weekend, didn't he, as well? He's 60. Sorry, John, for bringing that up. I'm sure that added to the celebrations. Is his style of management different to what you've been used to before? And what's really changed under him?
Yeah, he was 60 while we were out there. He did get a birthday cake. To be fair, a couple of girls got faces printed off as him. Like really proper one. So we sat in a meeting one night and he came in last and we were all just sat there and we had his face on. So it was quite funny, to be fair. But you know, I think obviously in WXV, he did very much change the way we played as England. I know he had more of a back role and let Lewis Deacon take charge. But since then, I just think what he wants off the field, we talk about our culture and he really recognises happy players makes really good players on the pitch and getting that balance right. And just, I think, posing us questions around how we play and why we're doing certain things. Whereas before we might have been a bit more regimented, this is what we're doing and probably not so much the why was the way I'd look with Mitch. He's definitely made me look at the game differently and why I make decisions and what the repercussions are of it. In just a lot more about rugby's a game of momentum and like how we play against teams, like how can at the end of the day set the life out of them and win the game.
Would you say, Marley, that your training week has changed under John? Because listen, I've known him for a very long time. You know, he's obviously got an incredible amount of experience and, you know, with all sorts of teams in many, many different countries. He's probably seen different training weeks every single time. Would you say you as senior players and the team have more input into what's going on, or is it the same or is it less? Because the training week's bound to change when you've got a new coach in charge.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very much very different than what we've had before. He's got a leadership group. He likes to work with the leadership group really closely and he feels like his messages get voiced down through that, but also that, you know, he's here to facilitate and make us better players and leaders. Obviously, the final say goes with him, but he's very much, that's how he wants it to be.
Who managed to persuade him to allow you to have your children come and visit then? Because as a father of children, it's easier to be away from your loved ones and just focus on test week. But as mothers of children, it's probably quite nice to have them come in at the right time.
Yeah, it is really nice to have him come in at the right time. And I think he generally believes that, you know, not just children, I think children are the main one, but, you know, a couple of girls bring the dogs in every now and then, like in our off time. And I think he just knows that if we're in a good place off the pitch, like I said, he's going to get a better performance out of us on the pitch. And I think he's like that himself. He's very family orientated. He talks about his wife all the time and his kids. And I think that's how much they mean to him. So he misses them when he's in camp. So, like, it's going to be the same for us.
Yeah, I think Sir Clive didn't allow Lawrence to take his children because he was dealing with a bunch of children, wasn't he?
No, really? That's not quite true.
Sort, I mean, sort them all out at the same time.
Lady Jane was allowed in the hotel, so there's no reason why anyone else wasn't allowed in. I mean, this Marley, just on this team, it's obviously only one game. It's one, you know, first game, first win, new coach, you know, 100 cats for you, few different players in the group. What's the growth of this team? You know, what's the potential in this team over this championship and beyond, do you think?
I think the growth is massive. Like, if we look at the team that went out there to play at the weekend, we had Emily Scarrett returning from a long-term injury, Zoe Harrison, ACL, Abby Ward coming back as giving birth to her little baby, Hallie. We've also got Sardine Cabay and Lucy Packer, who both missed WXV. So none of them have actually ever played the shape, the way that Mitch wants us to play. So I think, you know, that was their first taste of playing the new way and how we want to play. But also the likes of Maddie coming in first cap. What an amazing way to come into international rugby, winning against Italy in that opening game of Six Nations. But then also we can keep growing over the Six Nations. This really good, healthy competition that's going on at the moment in camp. Mitch is very much like he wants like two sets of 15 fit players so we can train properly against each other, where, you know, maybe before we've not been able to do that or numbers haven't been right, but he's very keen on that.
So the other results over the weekend, France beat Ireland 38-17, and Wales, oh, that was heartbreaking for them, wasn't it? Missed conversion right at the end. They lost to Scotland 20 points to 18. Marley, how do you view the progress being made by the other home unions? I mean, it's fantastic now that England are on a 25-match winning streak, but we really need you to come under a little bit more pressure, both for the competition itself, but I guess also for your own level of performance to go up.
Yeah, and I think you see this now, like the France game, like Ireland came out and gave them a tough game. It wasn't a walkover, where in previous Six Nations, Ireland haven't been performing. I think there's probably credit to Scott Beaman, he was the England-backed coach. He's gone over to Ireland, head coach. He's probably brought quite a bit of structure in for them, the way they want to play, but also that little bit of belief. The Scotland-Wales result is, yeah, fantastic result for Scotland. Obviously, I played with a few of the girls up at Saracens, and I just think they've got a lot of belief going on at the moment, a real like end goal of where they want to be. And I think the new WXV competition being out, and, you know, the locations in Vancouver, they came off the back of the last WXV as winners. Like, they can see themselves in that top tier. They just needed to beat the Six Nations. They need to obviously come third place, and they really see that as a driving place in where they want to be at. And then with that game as well, to beat Wales in Wales, which they haven't done, I think, is pretty special for them.
Now, listen, Marley, we're delighted that you're going to be joining us to give us weekly updates on the tournament. Thank you for that. Just give us an update then. You won your 100th cap. Congratulations. On the men's side, I know Danny Kerr recently won his 100th cap, and he got presented with a little sort of gold salver, or I think it's politely referred to as a mushroom by most of the team. Do you get presented with anything, and did you have to do another song to mark your 100th cap, or you only have to do that when you win your first cap?
So we got presented with the mushroom. It's a gold one. It was engraved, and we did it on the side of the pitch, and all my family there, so that was really special. And then we had to go to the after-match function. And since COVID, we've not really done many after-match functions. So this one was back in, and I'm not sure how it came about, but someone walked over to with a microphone and said, you have to sing the 100 Cap. So I did, and I did Country Roads, and then they said another one. So then I sang Angels, and then I sang Hey Mickey. So I thought, if I'm going to start, I'm just going to keep going, and they're going to be telling me to get off the microphone, and that's a result.
You're clearly not a fire retiring type then. You had three songs planned, and you sung them all.
Yeah, basically, that was, yeah. And I just thought then, if I get them out the way, I don't have to go on the bus on the way back or anything else. But the Red Roses, we kind of usually, on the bus on the way back from games, like man of the match usually has to sing, or if anyone's scored. So, you know, we like a good singing bus.
If anyone scored, go, 8 tries. If anyone scored, you'd be on that bus for hours.
Yeah, sometimes we are.
I saw the t-shirts that you had as well, which look quite, they're quite special. It's got all, did it have all your 100 games on the back of the t-shirt?
Yeah, and when I'd scored in the games as well, which there was a couple missing, but I let them off.
Listen, I think they've got to keep a bit more space on that t-shirt, because you're hopefully going to be winning your 101st cap against Wales. Before we sign off, give us a, will you be rotating the squad? Will there be a few changes? Anyone pick up any injuries, or just wait and see really till the week pans out?
I think we will see a few different faces, just because of the 6-day turnaround. I think, you know, this is a long tournament, and also Mitch has made it quite apparent that he wants to see different combinations working. So I think we will see, but I think we will still see hopefully a better performance. But it's one where I think we talk about other nations and them growing the gap and how they're playing. Like, we're not going to put these big score lines on teams straight away. We've got to work hard and be patient within the game, and then the scores will start coming, but it's going to take more time because teams are fitter. Teams have got more time to try and play with each other, which ultimately means it's going to be a tougher game, and any result can happen.
Yeah, and I guess your job is not to allow those teams to catch up. Your job is to move England forward and just say, look, guys, you know, I know it'd be more competitive for the tournament if everyone was a bit closer, but that's not our aim and objective. We actually want to be out in front, and we want to push our game on and develop our game as well. Listen, we wish you all the very best for that. It's on Saturday, isn't it? 4:45 kickoff. So Ashton Gate, I think there's some tickets still available. It's a great atmosphere down there on an evening game. So wish you all the best with that. And we look forward to hearing from you next week.
Thank you very much.
Well, that brings the final whistle on this week's Evening Standard Rugby podcast. My thanks to 100 Cap England captain Marley Packer. We'll be hearing from her throughout the tournament and give us weekly updates on England's performances and everything Women's Six Nations. And of course, my thanks to the Evening Standard's Steve Cording and to Nick Purewell. Please give us a like and a review on whichever podcast provider is your favourite. And of course, thanks to Vox Pod Studios too for hosting us. So until next week, it's goodbye from us.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.